my fellow Americans. This July, we're celebrating America's birthday at Moda Casino by giving away $1,776,000 in prizes. And one lucky winner is going to take home $1 million SC. Happy 250th birthday, America. You're welcome. Download Moto Casino today.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us, No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.
Giving you a behind-the-scenes look of Smashville's team. This is Preds Insiders with Adam Vingan. Smashville lives here on 102.5 and 106.3, The Game, and the Game Nashville Sports Network.
Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan here with you this evening, joined as always by Nick Keezer, my special guest co-host this week, the one and only Willie Donick, Predators television voice. My co-host on D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick every weekday from 11 to 2, and an Emmy Award winner. Congratulations, Willie, on the award, you and your fellow broadcasters.
Thank you. Our FanDuel Sports Network crew was given a Mid-South Emmy Award, and so we actually received the trophy earlier this week. Very cool stuff. I mean, that is a legit trophy, and so this is not everybody wins a trophy, so it is nice to get recognized. But my colleagues, great team effort on air. Chris Mason, Hal Gill, Lindsey Rowley, Kara Hammer, our producer Bob Cole, director Luke Rosenmeyer, Jacob Underwood, our unsung hero behind the scenes with graphics and everything. It was really, really cool. Jake Hartsfield, who kind of ties everything together, produces our pregame show. So it was for our game, for Predator fans, they'll remember this game, the game that got them to 16-0-2 last year, the come-from-behind win against Vegas, where they were down 3-0 and 4-1. Roman Josi ended up winning it in overtime. That was the broadcast that got us the Emmy. So I should thank Roman Josi for that grand finale there. But unfortunately, as we sit here a year later, things not going as well for Nashville.
Yeah, the only trophy the Nashville Predators are going to win this season is for most disappointing team in the NHL, and that's disappointing season continued on Tuesday night. The Predators lose 4-1 to the Florida Panthers at Bridgestone Arena. The Predators have lost 8 of 10. They are 2-8-0 in their past 10 games. They've been outscored 40-19 over that span. So we begin our long march toward the end of the regular season. The Predators have 25 games left. The playoffs are a near impossibility. Until I see the little E next to their name, I'm not going to say they've been eliminated, but effectively, they have been eliminated. But yesterday, Willie, Barry Trotz resumed his weekly conversations with Jarrett Stillman on Stillman and Company, and as always, Barry Trotz had a lot of interesting things to say. And there was one thing he said near the beginning of the interview that stood out to me. In his first response to Jared, he mentioned that he talked to the top players on the team after they returned from the Four Nations face-off break and said, here's the plan for the next couple of years. Are you in? If you are, great. If you're not, let me know and I'll make a move. And Jared followed up by asking Barry Trotz if any of those top players expressed any apprehension about the plan. This is what Barry Trotz said in response.
Well, it hasn't changed a lot, but I think everybody came here with the expectations we'd do a little bit better. Some of them weren't very realistic, as I said in the past, but I thought we'd be closer to the wild card, you know, a playoff spot than we are. You're only as good as your best players. Well, our best players haven't been our best players, and that goes from, I can go from goal from Saros to Yossi to Shea to Stamkos to Marshall. So I can go right down the list. There's no one having a career year. So I just said, you know, if you can't, you know, recover, or you don't feel that you want to be here, or you don't like the direction we're going, let me know, because I have no problem moving you.
That was Barry Trotz yesterday. And Trotz also said that he didn't receive any pushback from the top players. He didn't name which players he discussed this with, but we can all figure that out. He probably talked to Philip Forsberg and Roman Yossi and Steven Stamkos, among others. But according to Barry Trotz, Willie, the top players on this team, the players that have control over their situations because of their contractual clauses and such, according to Barry Trotz, they want to see this thing through.
Yeah, and okay, so let's give them that. I found it interesting. You know, Barry Trotz said not one of them has had a career year. I would take it a step further and say not one of them has really even had an average year. So that is the question. They might be in with the plan, but are they capable in the next year collectively of a bounce back and get back to, let's just say, career averages or better? You know, in a good year, somebody has maybe not necessarily a career year, but an above average year for your team to have an above average season. So I think that's really the bigger question than are the players bought in. But I think that was a good move by Barry Trotz to go in there and just say, look, how do you feel about this? This is my plan. Are you on board or you're not? Because you do want to get a commitment. So this is going to be a very tough last stretch of 2025 games. Last night was a really good example. You've got the Florida Panthers, a championship team who I give them a lot of credit. That's a dog day game for them. They don't have Matthew Tkachuk. They easily could have tried to say, hey, we'll just cruise in. It's a one-game trip. Let's go up to Nashville and just roll it out there and see what happens. But I thought they played very, very hard. They played championship-level hockey, and Nashville just is flat out. You could see the gap between Nashville and Florida. And I thought Nashville actually battled to stay in the game. That game could have gotten out of control in the first period were it not for some really good goaltending by UC Saros early. So this is going to be a tough stretch of games to play. If you look at the guys that we're probably talking about, Adam, they haven't been in this situation very often in their career where the season's over before you hit March.
Absolutely. And just looking at some of the basic numbers, goals and points, looking at the top players on this team, Philip Forsberg, who flirted with 50 goals last season, has 21 goals in 57 games. Jonathan Marchessault, who scored 42 goals last season, has 18 this season. Steven Stamkos, who scored 40 goals last season, and we're going to go into the weeds on Steven Stamkos later in the program, he has 17 goals in 57 games. Roman Yossi, 38 points in 53 games. And the Predators lost Roman Yossi in the game last night. He took a hit from behind from Sam Bennett. Sam Bennett is a tough customer. He toes the line, I would say. Sam Bennett is a player I would love to have on my team. He's that type of player, the player you hate to play against, but the one you would love to have on your team. But Roman Yossi left the game, did not return. We know that Roman Yossi has a history with concussion, so that, of course, is the concern in this situation. But Willie, considering how depleted the Predators' defense corps already is this season, if they are without Roman Yossi for any length of time the remainder of the season, that defense corps, that's probably the only noise I can muster when thinking about it.
It's a glaring weakness right now. You've got guys who are playing very hard but are being asked to do things above what their capability is in reality. And it's just an interesting thing to track. And now, as you mentioned, Roman Yossi was having, I think he would probably tell you, I don't know, I mean, he's this is a tough question to answer, but this is, if you look at his production, it's probably the lowest production he's had in a season that I can remember. You probably have to go back to when he was more of a role player on the way up, but he's just not close offensively or defensively to Roman Josi kind of stuff. The bar is so high for him. So now you take him out of the mix. Let's take a guy like Nick Blankenberg, who is a fringe overachiever. He's been told he's not good enough, not big enough his entire career. He's worked his way really hard to get back to the NHL. Now you're asking him to play against Sam Reinhart, Alexander Barkov, Carter Verhaeghe, Nathan MacKinnon. He's playing against top guys every night. Blankenberg gives it everything he's got every night. He is too far up in the lineup, but that's where they're at right now. Luke Shen is, at this stage of his career, a guy that gives you really high marks in certain areas. He is a bruiser. Last night, good example, big hits, stands up for Roman Josi, can penalty kill, but if you're asking him to play on the top pair, that's a little far of a reach for him and his role at this stage of his career. But this is where they are. They lost Dante Fabbro to the waiver wire earlier this year. They traded Alex Carrier. Then they lost Jeremy Lauzon for the season. Some of the other guys that they thought would fill the gap, like Adam Wilsby, he's hurt. Spencer Stastny hasn't been able to come back. So it's a series of things that lead you here. And now, right now on the decor, you've got a Brady Shea who has not found his niche nearly on this team. And you've got a number of AHL guys that are just trying to fill and placehold. And so that's not a good formula to win hockey games. And it's certainly not good when you can't score.
By the way, Roman Josi averaging 0.72 points per game. Last season averaged more than a point per game, 1.04. Two of the previous three seasons, he averaged at least a point per game, but at 0.72 this season. And we'll see what happens with Roman Josi. But you also have to factor in the trade of Alex Carrier for Justin Barron. The defense was weakened by that move because right. Carrier is a more seasoned defenseman than that, Barron.
Today,
the loss of Dante Fabbro.
Today that move looks very shaky. That trade does not look good right now. Justin Barron has a very good shot. That's a good tool. He's got some offensive skills. He has not played very well defensively. He's a guy, though, that they hoped would rise up, and there's still some time. But at the same time, losing Alex Carrier in the trade, especially now with the lack of experience you have, that one is not tracking very well at this point. And then, as you mentioned, Dante Fabbro, a right. So you, remember, Carrier's a right shot. Fabro's a right shot. Those guys are harder to find. Fabbro wasn't playing great, but he was a very steady NHL defender. Once again, we can talk about what's his best role, but not having either Carrier or Fabbro, that has come back to burn this Predator team for sure.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, Willie, Derek, and I had a really interesting conversation with Kevin Woodley of NHL.com on our program on Tuesday regarding UC Saros. We'll play some of that and react to it. That's coming up next. Adam Mingan and Willie Dunnick tonight. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Adam Mingan joined this week by Willie Dunnick. Yesterday on our midday show, D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, we were joined by Kevin Woodley of NHL.com. He is the NHL's resident goalie guru. And we've been having a lot of conversations this season about the play of UC Saros. So we thought it would be good to have Kevin Woodley on because he can really drill into the technical aspect of goaltending. He works with a company called ClearSight Analytics that has some really interesting numbers. And look, a lot of you are tired of hearing Willie and I try to explain certain things to you about UC Saros. So we thought it would be good to have someone from outside the market do that for us. This was part of our conversation yesterday with Kevin Woodley of NHL.com.
That's one of the things that jumps out at me is just how low his expected save percentage is. It's the 12th lowest in the National Hockey League amongst any goalie that's seen 250 chances this year. The only guy who's sort of playing workhorse number one minutes that has a lower expected, so a tougher defensive environment among the sort of the starters are Igor Shesterkin and Alex Nedeljkovic. Like everybody else that sort of has a harder environment around them isn't playing nearly as much. So I think that goes into it a little bit. And I guess I would ask this question too, from a performance standpoint, where do people think UC ranks right now in the National Hockey League?
I think most people, Kevin, look at the back of your hockey card kind of numbers, wins, losses, right, save percentage, goals against, and they compare it to past years, and they say right, he's having a bad year, or he's overrated, or hey, oh my gosh, they just signed this guy to an 8-year contract. Is he going down the tubes? But you can put it in context a lot better. For example, Adam and I just looked it up recently. We've been tracking this. In terms of success, right, in wins and losses, he is by far the goalie that gets the lowest goal support, right? He's got 2.1 goals per game in his starts, and of goalies that have played 25 or more games, that's by far the fewest per start. So you have to look beneath the surface to try to
right,
analyze in context his performance. This is a tough job.
Exactly. And I guess that's there's two parts to that, right? And actually, you bring up a great point about run support. I remember back when I was first sort of starting to dig into the world of goaltending at this level, Mika Kiprusoff was one of the best in the league at that time. And the Flames played a very defensive style of game. And it was the first time I sort of went around the league and asked as many goalies as I could, like, hey, what would you rather have? A team that locks it down defensively but might not score for you, or a team that's going to give up some chances and your job is a little tougher, but they're going to put the puck in the net, you've got some margin for error. And unanimously, guys would choose the margin for error. Give me a team that can score. So you give me that statistic, and I gave you the one I had about the environment, and what that tells me is he's got neither. So not only is he facing tougher chances than most of his peers, like I said, Shesterkin's sort of the only guy at that top tier playing that much that's got a tougher environment, but he's also not getting the run support.
That was part of our conversation with Kevin Woodley on the Midday Show yesterday. If you would like to hear the whole thing, it's great. You can find that wherever you find your podcast. So, Willie, after we got off the phone with Kevin Woodley, we looked at each other, you and me, and we sort of said to each other, isn't that what we've been saying all season long when it comes to UC Soros? It's good to hear it coming from somebody else, I think, as well.
I agree. I think if there's one thing you take out of everything he said is the environment that UC Soros is in every night. And if you are a Predators follower and you're listening to people on our station who are starting to worry about UC Soros, his game dropping off, especially entering into an 8-year contract. First of all, anybody who's on an 8-year contract, the last 2 or 3 years are going to be an aging player. That's just a given. So you know that that's the case. The key is the next 4 or 5 years, can UC Soros still be the elite goaltender that, by the way, the Athletics still has him in the tier one of their goaltending tiers. So Kevin Woodley just painted the picture for you. He faces the toughest environment in the NHL every night. We just got done talking about how the defense corps is in tatters. We can go through the numbers if you want of the heat that they give up every night. Last night against the Panthers was a great example. They gave up 11 grade A chances. 3 of them were put into the net. They gave up 4.35 expected goals. So you look at UC Soros, he gives up 4 goals on 25 shots. So on the surface, it doesn't look like he played well. He actually will get a quality start by analytic analysis there. He would get a quality start in the checkbox. And I think if you watch the game, you wouldn't say he played bad at all. And how many goals did they score? 1. So that goes even further down. So he has such a narrow margin for error that it is making it really, really tough. And he's human, so he feels the mental weight of all of that. You give up one or two goals, you're like, uh-oh, is my team going to be able to score and get back? It is a very, very difficult set of circumstances. I feel like UC Soros long-term is about the least of the problems that we've talked about with this team. And the list of problems is getting very, very long right now, things that they have to address. I feel good about UC Soros long-term. But I always make this point, and I think you have as well. He hasn't played his best hockey this
Correct.
Year, especially if we take a look at mid-December through the time that the league stopped playing. I think he had a dip. But I think all goaltenders, and Kevin mentioned Shesterkin, Andrei Vasilevskiy, you go down the list of elite goaltenders, they all have had, over the course of their career, a period of time of 4 to 6 weeks or so where they don't click for one reason or another.
So Kevin Woodley mentioned the run support, the goal support. Here are the updated numbers for UC Soros. So just as we discuss goals against average, the NHL tracks goals for average, the amount of goals a goaltender's team scores when he's on the ice. This season, UC Soros has received 2.18 in terms of goal support, 2.18 goals for average, which is the worst among the 34 goaltenders in the NHL who have started at least 25 games this season. And to put that into even more context, if you go back over the past five seasons, so go back to the 2020-2021 season, and you look at single seasons of goalies who have started at least 25 games in a season over the past 5 years, Soros' goals for average of 2.18 ranks 204th out of 209. So what we are seeing here is one of the worst cases of a lack of goal/run support that a goalie has had in the NHL over the past 5 years.
So once again, you give up a couple of goals, you're up against it. I haven't updated it recently, but I think the number right now is 11 or 12 games this year where UC Soros has given up two goals or less in regulation and lost, either in regulation or overtime. So, once again, has he had a Vezina Trophy type of season? No. Is he going to finish in the top six of the Vezina like he has each of the last 4 years, the only other 4 years that he's been a starter in the league? No. He's not having a great year. But he is a product of his environment right now. We just got done talking about every good player on the Predators has had a below-par season. That is affecting, and the defense has cratered. That is affecting UC Soros much more than UC Soros' individual play.
We saw this yesterday after our show. So UC Soros has won 12 games this season. And the analytics company that I work with, SportLogic, has a stat called goalie steals. And the easy way to explain it is if the goal saved above expected is higher than the margin of victory, it's considered a steal. So, for example, if UC Soros saves two goals above expected in a 2-1 Predators win, that's a steal because he saved more goals than the margin of victory. Of his 12 wins this season, four have been steals. So, to your point about his play over the course of the season, first month or so of the season, I would say first 6 weeks of the season, he was really good. Look at his
through
number.
Mid-December.
Right.
And Kevin Woodley talked about that. And
right.
He doesn't use SportLogic.
Yes.
But I think SportLogic and the ClearSight Analytics are two of the most in-depth
yes.
sets of numbers. Woodley had him sixth in the league up through, I forget the date
it
in
was
December.
December 15th, sometime.
I think.
Yeah. But I remember looking at the win around Thanksgiving against the Winnipeg Jets when the Jets came in. I think they were 17-3 at that point. Through 17 starts through that game, UC Soros had made a quality start in 14 of 17, which means he was really good in the majority of his starts. The problem was the Predators weren't scoring, and he wasn't being rewarded for his strong play. But then he started to struggle, and that's why his traditional numbers look the way they do. As you said, the back of the hockey card numbers. That's why they look the way they do.
Kevin Woodley also made a good point on this part of it. He said, it's very hard when you're in a brutal environment. I mean, you can picture, you know, storming the beach at Normandy. Like, if you've seen the movie, you know, what's the movie? The Tom Hanks movie.
Saving
Private Ryan, right? The beginning of that movie. That's about as tough an environment as you can envision, right? And that's the whole point of that movie, to show you what that was like. And that is, you were on a scale, on a relative to hockey, right? That's where UC Soros is. He's in the top two or three. Then you put on top of that the lack of goal support. He's in that. That wears on you. So Woodley's point was, it's hard to overcome that for an entire season. You can do it for a certain amount of the season, but at some point, it beats you down mentally. It beats you down physically. And I think the mental part in particular was wearing on UC Soros. And so he did slump. There's no question. And so now you've got to make it from now until the end of the season. They just lost Roman Josi. I don't know how long he's going to be out, but the environment may not improve anytime soon. Even if they want to play, quote, more defensive-minded hockey, it is not going to be easy for whoever is between the pipes for Nashville.
Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we're talking a lot about all of the struggles that this team is having, but we are going to focus on one player in particular, Steven Stamkos. We'll do that next. Adam Bingen with Willie Donick this week. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Bingen in with Willie Donick this week. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night. And it doesn't get any easier from here, Willie Donick. The Winnipeg Jets, who have won 10 games in a row, 41-14-3 on the season. The Jets will visit Bridgestone Arena tomorrow night before the Predators hit the road for a few games back-to-back in New York, Saturday at the Islanders, Sunday at the Rangers, Tuesday at Boston. Let's go back to July 1st for a moment, Willie. It was a much happier time for Predators fans. The Predators spent a boatload of money in free agency, but they signed the biggest free agent of them all, Steven Stamkos. The Predators signed Steven Stamkos to a four-year, $32 million contract. That's a cap hit of $8 million per season after spending his entire Hall of Fame career with the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning moved on. Steven Stamkos liked what he heard from the Predators, liked what compensation he received from the Predators, and signed a four-year deal with the Predators. This season has not gone well for anybody, as we've already discussed, but it's certainly not gone well for Steven Stamkos. Steven Stamkos is currently mired in the longest scoring drought of his illustrious career. He has gone 10 consecutive games without a point. His previous worst was 8 games in November of 2008, which was his rookie season, games number 10 through 17 of his career. That was his previous worst in terms of point droughts, but he is up to 10 games right now. He has 20 shots on goal over these 10 games, a nice round average of 2 shots per game. He is averaging 0.3 goals per game this season, which would be the second worst of his career, right ahead of the 0.29 he averaged in his rookie season. His 2.12 shots per game this season is the worst total of his career. So that's my long-winded way of saying that Steven Stamkos is having his worst season since his rookie season in 2008-2009. And we will talk about some of the thoughts we had about Steven Stamkos back then, but this season, certainly for Steven Stamkos, has been nightmarish, to say the least.
I think it goes along the line with the season for the team. So he's certainly not alone for the most part, but it is quite glaring what has happened to him. There was the stretch, I think, of about 20 games where he got a point per game for a quarter of a season. So
did that coincide with his shift to center?
Yes, right around that time.
Yeah.
And now, if you've noticed, last night they actually put him back at center about midway through the game to try to spark the offense, because they haven't really had any offense. They've gone 1-2 against three really good teams, but they haven't generated much offense. So, you know, to put it all together, you have a lot of struggles on defense that we've covered so far this hour, and the fact that you're not scoring, that's a big problem. Stamkos had that stretch where he, Marchessault, and Forsberg got hot. But I think one stat of all of those jumps out at me more than anything. We've been tracking this. He is a shooter, right? He still, when you watch him release his shot, I think when he's 55 years old, he'll be able to go out on the ice and he will still be able to rip one-timers and be a really good shooter. He is not, for whatever reason, for a lot of reasons, I think, is not getting his shot off enough. Shooters need to be able to shoot, right? He needs to get more looks and shots. So I think it's the biggest connecting is ideally he should not be playing center, I don't think. Ideally, he would be a winger that plays with a good distributor at center that gets him the puck. So there's a lot of theories. The question is, presuming he's going to be on the team for the next couple of years here, how do you get more out of him? And I think this is what they're asking Barry Trotz, I'm sure, along with the discussions with Andrew Burnett, the analytics team, all of the hockey ops people, the assistant coaches. How do you get more out of the guys that you brought here, like Marchessault, Shea, as examples? I think that is the big thing I think about with Steven Stamkos. And let's tie it in with something that we mentioned with UC Saros. I think when you're Steven Stamkos and you've played on cup-contending teams for as long as you can remember, right? Those first few Lightning teams weren't very good because he was the first pick in the draft. They were awful.
They made
time.
That Stanley Cup final yeah. against Chicago. And was
right.
that 20? Is that 2015?
Yes.
Okay.
So for as long as he can remember,
yes,
he's
been a very
on winning
long time
teams,
since
right?
He's been on a situation
and
been
he's
a situation
been
like this.
And he's been an elite player. He's going to make the Hall of Fame on the first ballot, right? We know that. So he's not used to having night after night where he looks in the scoring column and sees zeros, right? That's tough. That's weighing on him right now. And so when you go through the stretch, I think that makes it a very tough thing to be able to say, well, just break out of the slump. Just break out. I was a minor league baseball player. I can tell you when you go 0 for 4, 4 or 5 nights in a row, it weighs on you mentally more than it's hard to explain how much, but especially when you're used to having success. So I think Stamkos is dealing with a lot of things like that. The question is, how do you get more out of him? Because he's going to be here for the next couple of years.
One other thing I noticed as I was doing research on this subject, what's the one thing that Steven Stamkos does best? His one-timer, right? I believe he scored 20 goals off the one-timer last season. He scored 40 goals. Half of them came off the one-timer. He has 6 goals off the one-timer on 81 attempts this season, 43 of which have been on net.
That's a really interesting stat because I think if you watch on the power play, this is where the theory of too many right-hand shots comes into play. They haven't been able to get it to him in his sweet spot as much as they like. And so I think there are a lot of times where in the past, because of, you know, maybe there was just better talent around him, the combination of the right-left shots, there are times where he wants the one-timer. It might be there for a window, but the pass is a little bit off in his skates. They can't set it up. And he pump fakes it and has to go out. Or maybe he's lost a little confidence in it. There's a lot of theories. But I think that's the one thing that will be the last skill to go. I think the one-timer should be where he can be better. I think the bigger question long-term is 5-on-5. And let's take some of the centers. When he hasn't played center, Tommy Novak, we know, hasn't jumped up and grabbed the center role, which is what they really wanted to have happen, that he could play with a Stamkos or a Marchessault and distribute the puck, because that is what Tommy Novak's best skill set is. He is a distributor, but he hasn't had a good year, as we all know. Last night, they tried Fedor Svechkov, who they hope at some point can be a really good center for them. But he's still very young. Last night, he was overmatched. I think the hope was in the last couple of games, hey, let's see what Svechkov can do. Let's put him with Stamkos and Nyquist and see if they can find something. But I'm sure Stamkos is sitting there going, this rookie, he's struggling, right? That's why they switched in the middle of the game last night and put Stamkos back at center. Svechkov just wasn't able to get anything going and get the puck to Stamkos where he could shoot it. So the problems at center have definitely affected Stamkos.
That was the biggest question I had after the Predators signed Steven Stamkos. His impact at 5-on-5 was starting to diminish with the Tampa Bay Lightning, despite the fact that he was spending a lot of his time with players like Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, who we would both agree are two of the top forwards in the NHL.
Top of the top.
Right. So I thought to myself, well, if he's struggling to help them generate offense at 5-on-5, those two, what's going to happen when he comes here and he's playing with, as we thought during the offseason and into training camp, Tommy Novak and Jonathan Marchessault? And I think we saw that that line didn't click immediately. And that was my biggest concern, I think, about signing Steven Stamkos was, is it going to get to a point sooner rather than later where he is going to be a power play specialist? Because despite the fact that his one-timer isn't clicking as well as it has in past seasons, as you said, Willie, that's a skill that's not going to go away. And is Steven Stamkos just going to be the guy you put in the left circle to rip one-timers on the power play? He can still be valuable in that role, but you do need him to play at 5-on-5. So that was my biggest concern. And I just think that the roster construction this season, the fact that the Predators didn't go out and sign, you know, a heralded center, I guess you could say.
Right. But the choices, as we know, were not clear cut. And the ones that we thought might be out there and of interest to the Predators haven't really had great years.
We mentioned Chandler Stephenson often. I think of Elias Lindholm as well. He's not having a good season with the Boston Bruins. So
now you could say, would it have worked better here?
Maybe.
Maybe. I mean, it couldn't have gone much worse the way it's gone for the Predators. So it's all connected as well. My expectations for Stamkos were a little lower. I didn't think it was out of the question that he could have a year like that. I thought he would have more production on the power play, but I think the goal when he came in wasn't necessarily to have to drive offense 5-on-5. They thought they would get enough of that with Novak, Evangelista, O'Reilly, Nyquist, Forsberg, but none of those players have picked up the slack at all. So there's more focus on the fact that Stamkos, at this stage of his career, probably is not a guy that should be relied on to drive your 5-on-5 play. He's not that guy anymore. Could he still be a very effective player in the league on a good team? I think so, for sure. But it's all connected to the other problems that have all piled up, and it's like a domino effect.
Certainly. I thought he looked rejuvenated when they made that shift to center, and you mentioned
He would tell you himself he got rejuvenated.
He looked faster. He looked more engaged in the game. Not saying he was disengaged, but because you're playing center, you're more involved. You noticed him on the ice every night when they made that shift and they put him with Forsberg and Marchessault. But yeah, I mean, look, Steven Stamkos isn't getting any younger. The Predators have a lot of things they need to work out on their roster. And they need to put Steven Stamkos in the best position to succeed. And I don't think they have, by and large, this season. I don't think he's helped himself either. But as I listed, you know, he's shooting the puck at a rate that he's never shot it in his career, in terms of career worst. And it would be one thing if he was having a really bad season, but firing the puck at a career average rate. But it's far below that. And that, to me, is the most concerning thing. Not so much that he's not scoring, which, of course, is a concern, but the fact that he's not getting as many opportunities for himself as he's shown he can in the past.
Right. What does every coach say when he's asked a question? You've been in this position. Hey, so-and-so is struggling. What are you seeing?
They're gripping the stick too tight.
Well, yeah. So the first thing a coach is going to say is he getting chances?
Yes,
right.
That too.
And so if the answer is no, he's not getting chances, then that's the concern. If a guy is getting chances but the puck's not going in, then the coach usually isn't as alarmed, right? But I think that's why I circle the he's not getting the shot volume, Stamkos, that he has in the past. He needs to get and generate better looks, and his teammates are partially responsible for that, and he's got to find a way to be effective. So it's a combination, but his shot volume being down, he's a good shooter. Good shooters need to shoot. He will get more shots.
Steven Stamkos will attempt to snap the longest point drought of his career tomorrow night against the Winnipeg Jets.
They're kind of hard to score on.
They are. They do have a really good goalie, if you haven't noticed, named Connor Hellebuyck. But Steven Stamkos, 10 consecutive games without a point, the worst drought of his career. His previous long was 8 games at the beginning of his soon-to-be Hall of Fame career. Coming up next on Preds Insiders, we're talking a lot about centers. Well, Willie, you brought my attention to something yesterday written in The Athletic about a center who could be on the move. We'll see if it's a fit for the Nashville Predators. We'll do that next. Adam Vingan in with Willie Donick. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan joined by Willie Donick this week. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night. They conclude their homestand against the Winnipeg Jets, winners of 10 in a row, 41-14-3 on the season. Another tough test for the Nashville Predators. But the NHL trade deadline, Willie, is a week from Friday, March 7th. We're wondering what the Predators might be up to. We've talked about what my ideal trade deadline would look like. We did that the other day on DVD. And one of the points I made was look for a long-term answer at center. And you sent me an article yesterday written by Shayna Goldman of The Athletic looking at Casey Mittelstadt. Casey Mittelstadt was traded not too long ago from the Buffalo Sabres to the Colorado Avalanche in a one-for-one deal for Bowen Byram. And the Colorado Avalanche have been looking for a second-line center since Nazem Kadri left after the... He was a part of a cup-winning team, right?
Yes, he was the... did he win the Conn Smythe? I mean, he had a huge
He had a huge impact for the Avalanche.
And cashed in.
He leaves, he goes to the Calgary Flames. Remember, the Avalanche tried Ryan Johansson in that spot.
They traded for
Ryan Johansson. That did not work out. So they went out and got Casey Mittelstadt. And that really hasn't worked out for the Avalanche. So Shayna Goldman was looking at some teams that could be interested or should be interested in Casey Mittelstadt. And she mentioned the Nashville Predators, which I thought was interesting. This is, by the way, purely speculative. She's not reporting anything. But this is what she wrote in part about Casey Mittelstadt. Nashville could use two things, center depth and more puck movers. Steven Stamkos has played some center this year, but the 35-year-old may become more of a full-time winger in the near future. Even Tommy Novak has spent some time on the wing this year after taking a step back on the ice. So if the Predators think they can get Mittelstadt's game back on track, he could help Nashville reload for next year. The return could go a few directions. Nashville could take on Mittelstadt's contract for draft picks, giving Colorado more cap flexibility and trade assets. Or maybe the Avalanche could bet on their own reclamation project in Novak, whose transition game has completely fallen flat this season after being such a standout over the last two seasons. Colorado may have to sweeten the deal to make up for the $2-plus million difference in cap between those two centers, though. Casey Mittelstadt signed for 2 more years after this one at $5.75 million per season. Thoughts on Casey Mittelstadt?
I think Shayna Goldman, and she's been on our show before, Adam, she does as well as anybody at breaking down the numbers.
Yes.
And, I mean, I'm talking about deep, deep numbers and putting it in terms that we can understand. And I think she, granted, she's not in all the locker rooms. It's hard for any of us really to know how the human chemistry could go together. So she did a similar piece, too, on Dylan Cousins, another guy who is playing for Buffalo, who's a center, who might or might not, you hear his name in trade rumors. And so you're asking yourself, okay, should the Predators get into this game? Because we've just talked about how much of an issue they're having at center. The thing that intrigues me about Mittelstadt is he's got 2 more years after this year at 5.75. That is not going to break your bank for a guy that might be a useful upgrade for what you've got right now. So what your scouts, to go with your stat number crunchers, right, have to try to assess is, could Mittelstadt, who is a left shot, right, could he be a better fit? Could he be a guy that is a better distributor of the puck and could get Steven Stamkos more shots, could get Jonathan Marchessault more opportunities. Balance your lines a little more. It's what the Avalanche hoped would happen, and he hasn't been a great fit there. His numbers really don't overwhelm you. He was the eighth pick in the draft back in the day. He's only 26 years old.
Eighth pick in 2017. He's 26 years old. He turns 27 in November.
He's played on some bad Sabres teams, so you could chalk some of that up to just being a young player on a team that didn't know how to win, couldn't get anything done. He did have a nice run last year for the Avalanche. He looked like he was a really good fit there. It hasn't worked for whatever reason this year, but the Avalanche are top-heavy, right? They've made a ton of deals. They're wheeling and dealing. They've used like 47 players. That hasn't made it easy on Mittelstadt, but he's definitely his stock is down. So if I'm the Predators, I definitely am kicking the tires on this to take a look. It would depend on what you would need to give up to get him. But I like that his name is not attached to a 4 or 5 year commitment, and he's only 26. You could see if it works and then just let him become a free agent if it doesn't work. But I think that's where they are right now in their quest to try to find younger players, A, and B, centers that are better than the centers they have right now.
I think a first-round pick would be the place to start when you consider some other moves that have been made involving top six centers. The Winnipeg Jets traded a first-round pick for Sean Monahan when he was on Montreal. They used a first-round pick in part to acquire Sean Monahan. I believe the Canucks traded a first-round pick to get Elias Lindholm out of Calgary. We saw Mikael Granlund, who can play in the top six, receive a first-round pick going from San Jose to Dallas. So I think a first-round pick is probably going to have to be part of this hypothetical deal. I wouldn't trade the Predators' first-round pick, but they have two others. They have Tampa Bay's, and they have Vegas's. So I think in a hypothetical deal for Casey Mittelstadt, one of those later first-round picks, based on recent trade comps for top six centers, is probably going to have to go the other way.
I think you're probably right. The other one that is the wild card, because I'm not sure if Colorado at this stage, because they're still trying to win, would they take a project who's a little more of a project in Novak that has some money attached to them? That would be a question. The other part is, would they want to take Ryan O'Reilly, and how would that affect it? You know, Mittelstadt, his stock is down, so I don't think you need to trade O'Reilly and a first-round pick. If it would it be a straight-up, could you get picks back? Nashville's already acquired a lot of Colorado picks. They've already made some deals
with
Colorado.
They have made a lot of deals over the past few years.
But let's say it's what Shayna speculated there, a series of picks to reload, because Colorado's traded a ton of draft picks. They don't have much draft capital. If it's Mittelstadt for the pick they got from Vegas for Askarov, and maybe a couple other picks, maybe even throw a prospect in there, that intrigues me a lot, because then you're sitting there going, okay, we traded Askarov, we got David Edstrom, who's a good center prospect, you get Mittelstadt. That's one worth looking into, I think.
We'll see what happens. The NHL trade deadline is a week from Friday, March 7th. The Predators are back in action tomorrow night against the Winnipeg Jets at Bridgestone Arena. All coverage, of course, right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. For Willie Donick, I'm Adam Bingham. This is Preds Insiders, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spend on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hi, everybody. It's James and Andy here from your next favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two-fourths of a group of people who love facts, and we love to find new facts, and we come here every week and tell each other about them. For instance, Andy, did you know that one of the world's oldest cycling road races is getting much harder because people keep stealing the road?
I want to know more already, but I'm instead going to tell you my new fact, which is that some ancient coffins from the 17th century have faces.
The coffins have faces.
It's really creepy.
Not just on the inside.
No.
Wow. If you like the sound of those facts, or indeed facts in general, then come and find us. No Such Thing as a Fish, wherever you get your podcasts.